Hi, this is Scott Rouse from Wizards of the Coast, and you're listening to the Vorpal Network.
I'm Chris Youngs, and I'm a monster. And I'm listening to The Tome.
I'm Scott Rouse, and I'm a monster too. And you're listening to The Tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 87. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we find a missing party member with Scott Rouse at Gen Con 2008. It's the Lost Gen Con episode. Ooh, spooky. Okay, yeah, not really. Anyway, I found this little interview that the Fistful of Comics and Games guys did for me. Gotta love the Vorpal Network members. While they were at Gen Con, and I had set it aside and sort of forgotten about it in all the con glut of interviews. But I promise, it's a short one, a good one, and the real last Gen Con episode of the year. I swear. There has been a bit of discussion over on the forums about the length of the last advice episode with Eitan Bernstein. I'd love to have you join in and let me know what you think. And no, I don't plan on making a regular thing of hour-and-a-half-long episodes, but I do have a little more than an hour on the Forgotten Realms campaign guide and player's guide recorded and ready to release. Should that one be one episode? Or two shorter episodes? You can find the forums at thetomeshow.com to let me know. But now, the Rouse!
All right, well, this is Chris and Ben, and we're with Fistful Comics and Games, and we're here to talk to Scott Rouse, the lead designer, developer type business person for WotC. I've just made up a ton of titles, but okay.
That's a new one. I'm the senior brand manager for D&D, so I oversee sort of the business management of all the D&D gaming products.
Excellent.
And I'm glad to be here with you guys, so...
So, fourth edition is out, and has there...
The first three books.
Yeah, the first three books. Has it gone according to plan, or...
Yeah, you know, well, yes and no. The edition is out. It's been wildly successful. You know, we're on our third reprinting of the core rule books. We normally, we try and produce about 12 months worth of inventory. And before we had even started, really, it had gone on sale. We were shipping a lot of it to distributors and stores. We realized that we were not going to have enough to last 12 months. So we went on a reprint right before it launched in June. We're now on a second wave of reprinting. So it's technically it's had three printings. And it's just tremendously popular. All our events here at the Sagamore Ballroom at Gen Con for the Living Forgotten Realms, which we're launching this week, are sold out. It's not super crowded in here today, but I think as the weekend progresses, it's going to be more and more busy to probably at some point where every table will be full of people gaming. And the majority of them are going to be playing 4th edition. So we made a couple bestseller lists. We were on the USA Today bestseller list. I think we peaked at around 47 amongst the top 300 books selling available. And that includes anything, you know, Catcher in the Rye. Maybe we beat J.D. Salinger for a couple weeks. So we were in the top 10 on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. We were very high ranked on Amazon sales. And the response has been great. People are loving 4th edition.
Cool. With that in mind, where do you see the product going in the future as far as we're going to do with it?
Yeah, so, you know, we really, when we did 4th edition, we really tried to time it out. In 3rd edition, we tended to sort of front load a lot of really good product in the early years of 3rd. The 3.5 update sort of refreshed some of that, but want to try and spread it out more to sort of spread the goodness of the edition out throughout a number of years. Right now, essentially, we've tentatively planned products for about 2013, which sounds so far away. But really seeing how long can we push the edition out and still have it, you know, continue to be the products that people want to buy and still, you know, support the business that we need to operate. So physical products, it's going to be continuing to offer new options for classes. We've got the Player's Handbook 2 coming out in 2009. We've already mentioned that there's a couple of races that we've said are going to be in there, the Goliath, the Gnome. You know, everybody who thought the Gnome was just going to be a monster is now going to be a PC race in Player's Handbook 2, as well as some classes that will, more classes that will come out. I'm not exactly sure what we've spoiled there, so I'll leave it to maybe Rob or one of the other designers to talk about that in the next wave of interviews. But continue to offer more options, books like Martial Power that comes out in October that will offer new powers and options for martial class. And then also expanding all our digital tools. We're showing off here a couple of the applications. The Character Builder, which is essentially a database-driven character sheet, has been very well received. We have the Game Table, the Character Visualizer, and we'll be releasing those. That would be, I guess, an area where I wish that we had had those out at launch. I know some people were frustrated that they didn't come out, but what we really wanted to ensure was that we were releasing quality products and not necessarily trying to hit a deadline. You know, as with the software industry, lots of games tend to slip, and really kind of taking a cue from Blizzard a little bit and what they have done, sort of release it when it's ready and not when it's when you know a schedule says we need to release it, to ensure that when we do put it out, it's the best user experience. I wish we had had them out at launch, so that was kind of when we asked sort of what was good, what was bad. But, you know, it's great. We're starting to get stuff with D&D Insider out. You know, we did have Dragon Magazine, Dungeon Magazine. We're putting out over 100, almost 160 pages of content that people are using in their game, adventures, Paragon Paths, new powers. We just did a ritual article.
I saw
in
that.
Dragon.
That was pretty cool.
So those types of things, you know, is what's exciting about Insider right now, and it's all free. We also have the Rules Compendium, the D&D Compendium, which offers a database to look up rules from the Player's Handbook, as well as now we've added stuff from Dragon and Dungeon. We'll be adding Monster Manual and other books as they come out.
Excellent. It sounds like the Rules Compendium could definitely be a great resource, especially for people who miss articles from Dungeon or Dragon.
Yeah.
That happened to me a lot when the magazines were in print form.
And all that data feeds the Character Builder. So if you want to take, you know, a particular power from an article in Dragon that maybe you did miss, in the Character Builder you'll be able to have access to that data. It's all going to be entered. We'll probably be doing updates about once a month for the data set. So sort of we'll push out a patch of new information. And, you know, Insider is a very exciting thing that I think, you know, here being at the show and actually getting to see people play with it really for the first time is kind of exciting. So
one thing I've noticed online, urban discussions on how D&D has become a bit more signature, as far as like the races are a bit, I guess, not quite the standard traditional fantasy.
Things like the Tiefling and the Dragonborn.
Yeah.
That certainly was sort of, I think, you know, getting in a little of the design discussion, having some new flavor that we could add to, you know, in I guess with third edition, it would sort of the parallel sort of big brawny type of race would have been the orc or the half orc. And now we have the Dragonborn. And it's just, I think it's fun. It's a new flavor. It's pretty cool. I like the breath weapon ability of the Dragonborns. The Tieflings have some interesting flavor. It kind of goes with the theme that the R&D team, when they designed 4th edition, really wanted to have sort of not only unique roles for player characters, but unique races that you could play your characters with. So it's a lot of people were, I think, a little bit concerned in the beginning. Like, you know, there was a lot of sort of ranting type threads on message boards about,
oh,
how dare they take the gnome away, and
hooray, they took the gnome away.
Or hooray. Yeah. I think it adds a lot more flavor. It takes a little of the sort of, I guess, homogeneous flavor. You know, are elves that different than humans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe not. They're all sort of, you know, kind of similar in many ways. They have their own, you know, unique style. But I think you get a little bit more sort of disparity between some of the player character races with the new additions. And, you know, we're going to bring back old favorites. Like I said, the gnomes coming back in Player's Handbook 2, and, you know, rumors are that the shifter may be in there too, so we'll see if that actually happens. But there is some sort of cat-like creature on the cover. I don't know what exactly that is. Some sort of planar cat, who knows. So the phantom cat, I think they called it.
Speaking of the shifter, I don't know if you can answer this or if you have any idea, but I know a lot of people are really curious about when Everon is going
to.
I know they've mentioned D&D Insider.
Yep.
Content would support it.
Yeah, like there's Artificer stuff going up right now that'll make it into Everon. They put out an article, and now they're sort of playtesting through that. In fact, there's a message board where if you're interested in the Artificer, you can actually go and play it and then provide feedback. And that is Steve Schubert, who's working on that design, is taking that feedback and incorporating it into what will eventually be in the Everon books. And you know, James Wyatt and Keith Baker are sort of the key people working on a lot of the story element. Everon's not going to see as big a change as the Forgotten Realms saw, because Everon is still really fresh. Unlike the Forgotten Realms, where we had years and years and years of the fluff and flavor of Everon so dialed in to the point where people would be like, you know, if there was ever a continuity dispute, people were like, wait a minute, you can't see that from the, you know, towers of Waterdeep. What are you talking about? You know, it's like, but Everon, we still have a lot of things to explore. There's a lot of things that need to be explained. You know, in the setting, we're only a couple years after the Hundred Year War, so things are still very turbulent. And so there's a lot of that ports over really well into fourth edition. People were asking today, we had the Everon seminar, and people were asking James and Keith, like, well, how do you explain, you know, some of the new races like Dragonborn or Eladrin in Everon? And largely that does, because a lot of that existed in third edition, it still does port over. There may need to be some flavor that's added to that, but they should be able to do it in, I think, a way that doesn't feel like it's too sort of disconnected from the continuity that was established in 3.5. So
excellent. Well, speaking of flavor, I was wondering, as far as the core flavor of like the Eladrin and elves and stuff, would they be primarily found? Would that primarily be found in the Dragon Magazine DDI, or was that going to be in future releases, such as like a book on certain races?
Yeah, you get some of that in, like for example, there's a ton of stuff on Drow in the new Forgotten Realms, as well as the Genasi. So the some of that will come in supplemental books like the campaign setting books. There will probably be more stuff on Drow in Eberron, because the Drow are treated differently in Eberron than they are in Forgotten Realms. And then there's probably, and I don't know the exact details, you may see, what you will see in a book like Martial Powers, there may be some things like feats that key off of, you know, race, some that key off of class. I don't know how much of that is fluff versus crunch in those books, but I would suspect that you do start to get a little more flavor built up in some of those. But if I were to wager, I would say it would lean more on the sort of crunchy side than the fluffy side. But Dragon is absolutely a really good place for that type of write-up. Like we did the Warforged write-up, for example, where I think we'll really, that's probably where you'll see a lot of that. And we can, you know, with it being digital, we can react fairly quickly to that. So if we see that there is a big demand for, I want to know more about, you know, this particular, this race or this particular area within the world, we can add that article in real much more quickly than we can with, let's say, putting it on our production schedule. Because typically on like a book in miniatures, we're working as far as 18 months out. So there's stuff that's in some level of development going on now where the consumer won't see it until sometimes, you know, like late 2009, for example. Whereas Dragon, we can essentially commission an article and it can go up within a month or two.
Yeah.
So it can be much more reactive to the community with the digital medium.
Well, should we wrap up with a few questions about your thoughts on the GSL and
sure.
How that's going to go? Or
yeah, you know, we just announced that we're going to be making some changes. And I don't want to, I've been sort of cautiously saying that it's the changes that we've suggested to our brand and the sort of larger brand and legal team should make the license much more user-friendly. We've been listening to a lot of the feedback from publishers, the feedback we've been seeing on the message boards from fans, and we're taking that to heart. And we really do, you know, want to have a license that publishers find is friendly to use and that not only suits the needs of their business, but, you know, with the view that it will ultimately help our business. We want to have people like Goodman Games and Mongoose and Necromancer and Paizo and these other folks producing content that 4th edition players are thirsty for, that they want, you know, people want to see stuff from Clark Peterson and Necromancer Games. People want to play Dungeon Crawl Classics in 4th edition. And ultimately, we benefit from that because it helps us to sell more books like Player's Handbook and Monster Manual. So the changes we hope will come out in the next couple of weeks, and I think the response will be really positive. So
cool. Well, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
It's always good to talk with you guys.
And there's Scott Rouse. Now, I want to tell you about a podcast novel series that has been fantastic. I never would have thought I would find so much interest in what is basically a merchant story about trading that just happens to be set in space. But I'll tell you what, I devoured this story in days. You have to check it out.
Available now on podiobooks.com.
When Ishmael Horatio Wong is orphaned by a flitter crash, he must make some hard decisions about how to survive in a company-owned universe. With limited time and fewer options, he lands a job as the newest hand on the solar clipper Lois McKendrick and learns the importance of a good cup of coffee. If you're a fan of space opera but always wanted a story with a different kind of hero, meet Ishmael Wong. He isn't the lost son of an overthrown monarch. He isn't the captain of the ship. He's not even an officer. He's not rich or tall or handsome. He's not particularly bright. He's just an average guy trying to make his way in the universe. In the tradition of Half Spacesuit Will Travel and Farmer in the Sky, Quartershare begins the story of profit, confusion, and the heroism of day-to-day in the deep dark. Set sail with Ishmael, Pip, Beverly, and the rest of the crew of the Lois McKendrick in Quartershare, a trader's tale from the golden age of the solar clipper. A new science fiction novel by Nathan Lowell. Find it on podiobooks.com today.
Okay, well, that's episode 87. You can email the show at thetomeshow@gmail.com, and don't forget to swing by the forums and let me know what you want to see out of episode length. I'm also curious what companies you regularly look at for quality D&D products, so hop on the forum as well. Also, you can help get the show noticed with reviews or votes on various sites, but more than that, get out there and tell people about the show. When you're sitting around the table for your annual Halloween game, please, let slip about that awesome D&D show you listen to, and maybe mention the Tome Show as well. Also, don't forget to consider checking out the Tome's Amazon store. for products discussed on this show and more. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. And I want to thank those of you who have been using the Tomes Amazon store. It's made a big difference for me and really helped me sort of cover the expenses of the show. And you can find all of that at thetomeshow.com, along with links for things mentioned in this show. This has been episode 87, Scott Rouse at Gen Con 2008 of
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
I'm on the wall.